could start recording here myself. Okay. These will be available for you if you want to study these matters in depth in a conversational manner. And if you want to take them to your study groups, they can be useful. You know, you can just turn them on for a particular paragraph or sentences and see what I have to say about it, then turn it off and discuss. So there's lots of ways that you can use this. You know, we do have, I just want to make these announcements. Tomorrow, we're going to have the Soul of Nations meditations. There's so much going on. But after that, and probably into the first week of January, we will not have the ASK work, and we will resume it in January. But meanwhile, we'll be sending you notes about the solstice meditation, the Christmas vigil. Tuya had about five of these different broadcasts yesterday, and we will send them out to you. So if you want to participate with us, you can. And in this New Year's vigil, it really is, we're going to be on for about 12 or 13 hours, and we'll have various guests, and you have the opportunity to write in your thoughts ahead of time, and we will speak them out in certain contexts, and you can come and go as you please anytime. We'll be working from 10 a.m. Finnish time until 10 p.m. or 11 o'clock. Anyway, we'll be working beyond the midnight here. We won't be able to catch everybody's midnight for the change of year, but I think, you know, it'll be sufficient. So do join us as soon as you get all the links on these things, and I'll have to trust Brett to be after me to make sure that I'm not making any mistakes. Mercury retrograde has not been kind, and I'm just amazed at how it really does work. You know, things just go as you would not expect them. But we are planning quite a bit of broadcasting for you for the latter part of December. Also, I do want to put in a plug for you. We are beginning now the 10th year of the Moria Federation. We've completed a cycle of 9. There have been many people who have passed through some aspect of our training, and maybe only a few who have really completed the entire process, and some have gone on to get their degree at the University of the Seven Rays as well. After they have completed the Moria Federation, they do some kind of dissertation or thesis. One has done that, another is inquiring. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of people at the foundation of this work, and they're learning occult meditation, and they're learning esoteric psychology and so forth. And then comes the more advanced work, which is an attempt to approximate something of the preparatory school work that Master DK talked about for the new esoteric schools. Now, they are not going to be a piece of cake. He talks about, for all of us, and I'm sure in our future lives we'll be experiencing this, about the drastic entrance examination before we can get in. Now, this is 100 or 200 years in the future or whatever. We're not so drastic, okay? Anybody who wants to apply and is really interested in occultism, we have a level at which you can work. But for those who are really students of the Ageless Wisdom, whether in Theosophy or Alice Bailey, and who have been at it quite a while, I would recommend the 5-year program, which is the advanced program. For some people can start right away in the advanced program because they've studied for years, you know, and that would be their proper place. But we do have, you know, concentrations of students in various places, and we want more. There's a big concentration of Brazilian students speaking Portuguese, and there's a believe it or not, a big concentration of Vietnamese students, and it's wonderful there that so many are applying. due to, I think, a very powerful disciple who's a member of our group who is Vietnamese. So we're spreading as widely as we can and trying to prepare the way for the new esoteric schools. Now, you know, DK is going to be writing again. He says in the year 2025, and he talks about his astrological writings beginning in 2025. So I don't know what he's going to write about, but he mentions astrology, and he mentions from the year 2025. So installment number 3 is on the way. And I think the best thing we can all do, since it's such a treasure, you know, and I mean, who can fathom what he has given, is to spend these next years really learning deeply and assimilating what he has given as much as is possible for us, and then applying it in any way we possibly can, and being ready in that way for the coming of the new installment, which he promises, because he says this series of bridging treatises is not yet over. So I think, you know, it's going to last for the remainder of the transition period before the true age of Aquarius begins in 2117 with the transit of Venus once again across the face of the sun. So we can do our bit by working subjectively in a very powerful way and equipping ourselves, equipping our minds, equipping our meditative ability, and serving in an esoteric manner or whatever manner we wish. We have a big responsibility placed upon us, and I, at the moment, you know, maybe I'm a little biased, but I can't think of any other better way at this moment than to join the Moria Federation, really dig into it, push yourself farther than you ever thought you could push yourself, despite all of your responsibilities, and we all have them. Really get into it and really equip yourself for further usefulness to hierarchy and to humanity. Okay, that's my pitch, right? That's a little pitch. So just go to MoriaFederation.com, and you'll see the different kinds of applications that are there. And maybe, you know, you'll choose one and enter the federation at some level suitable to your to the intensity of your interest and your experience. Okay. So there are quite a few of us here tonight, and I'm glad to see you all. And a lot of familiar faces here. And let's just have a little gathering before we conclude this section from A Treatise on White Magic, in which we've been dealing with fear. Okay. The fear that the leader of the webinar might not show up. I've had 2 strikes against me now, you know. So now we'll see whether I can, the next time it's necessary, whether I can get the idea of add 2 hours, not 3. Okay. So wherever we may be, there's some 34 of us present, it appears. We realize that we are coming together to offer ourselves as an instrument for the dissipation of glamour, which is holding so many people in kind of a psychological prison. Hopefully it's not holding us to any great degree, but we don't want to have the glamour that we're rid of all of our glamours. And we know that if we follow the instructions of the master, that we are offering a little bit to the clarification of this situation. Which is a real world problem and a severe one. And in the days of nuclear proliferation, it's a very serious situation. So we'll learn to work esoterically and have an effect from the inside out in clarifying the miasmatic, is there such a word, miasmatic situation on the astral plane. Try to get rid of, in a way, the phantasmagoria of the astral plane. And just have it be an area of divine expression which is useful in expressing the energy of love. And it's a long-term process. So we begin now, but the real assault against glamour probably will occur after Vulcan has been discovered, and it may be a few centuries into the future, DK seemed to suggest, but work has to be done now. And just close this little reflection with an Om. Now, let's see. This is it here. We went this far, and I'd like to complete this so that when we begin again in the early part of January, we have a kind of a new initiative going. Of course, we'll always be dealing with glamour, but it's good not to leave this section hanging over. So I'll try to work on it in such a way that we can. It's not too long, and it's very practical. So we'll work together and think together, and as we go along, make your notes about what you might like to say or question or something of that nature. So DK is talking about the stresses of the present time and the hierarchy's attitude, what they see. And it's a comforting section in a way, comforting and inspiring at the same time. We sometimes think that these great beings are somehow far away, but of course it's an illusion. It has simply to do with the degree of our sensitivity and the sensitivity, really, of the brain cells. We are told. So always more sensitive, we're on a second ray planet at this time. It's a sole planet on the second ray in a second ray solar system. This is the ray of sensitivity, and we're being schooled by Sirius, which is the brilliant star of sensitivity. We're just getting more sensitive all the time. And that's as it should be, and the more we are, the the less distant the great ones will seem to be. They're not distant at all, but our own obtuseness is what prevents our registration of their nearness, if I may say. So those of us who watch and guide on the inner side of life realize more than perhaps you who bear the burden and heat of physical plane existence know. Okay, this is their perspective. We know your physical disabilities, and someday may be able to help definitely in the building up of strong bodies for world service. This involves the coming in of seventh ray bodies, or of the culture of the etheric body via the seventh ray. If you read in a treatise on cosmic fire, you'll see he predicts that bodies of a much more sensitive and healthy kind are going to be with us. Not necessarily that everybody will be on the seventh ray, you know, that's a different matter, but the seventh ray will recondition the etheric body of the planet and the etheric body of the disciples, and will be able to bear much more than at present we can. So this is one of their promises, and whether it occurs in a century or two, whatever it is, as the seventh ray becomes more definite, definitely present, this will occur. He pretty well tells us that by the end of this century, both Pisces, the influence of Pisces, and of the sixth ray will be gone. And when we're looking at more specific dates, we might say like by 2117, by 2125, but in general, the waning of the influence of these obstructive influences from the lower part of these entities, Pisces and the sixth ray, will be gone with the close of this century. But now, he says, such is the astral miasma. You know, you can only imagine a swamp and the will-o'-the-wisp and the false lights which attract us. And, you know, he doesn't want us to glorify the astral plane because it's really quite a hissing gray serpent. Now, such is the astral miasma. It is well nigh, not entirely, but well nigh impossible for you, our struggling brethren, that's how they regard us in brotherhood, to have good health. Well, and this was a problem among his most sincere students. They lacked the vitality. They just didn't have everything they needed to do everything they wanted to do. The karma of the world prohibits it. And karma simply means condition, in a way. The condition in which we have left things. You know, you make your bed, you lie in it, as it said, I do something and there it is, until it's undone or done better, you know. So we're always using Saturn and the third ray to condition the circumstances. And until we recondition them, that's how they are. So maybe things have lightened up a little. I don't know. We've had a great wave of consciousness come through. You kind of, you know, it's been a big second ray sweep. And as he says, the day of opportunity will not always be with us. So at in the year 2075, the big 500-year cycle of the second ray will be over. And then it will be in withdrawal, but not really, because the Christ and his forces are coming in, bringing in the planetary soul. So the second ray will always be present, especially on our planet, but we will be finished with that 500-year cycle, which he discusses. So anyway, in terms of perfect health, He sometimes says the South Sea Islanders, maybe that was in those days, have that kind of health and vitality that he wishes everybody had. They're so close to the pranic source. Perfect health cannot be ours at the moment. The astral corruption, now, you know, this is not a pleasant picture here. The astral corruption and the foul cesspools of the lower levels of the mental plane infect all, and lucky is he who escapes. This is almost done, you know, in a very medical manner, and we realize we're dealing with, if we were to deal with it on the physical level or the etheric level, we would call it contamination. We would call it disease. So we have a diseased condition on the lower 18 subplanes. And of course, the astral plane where we're concentrating at the moment is part of it. We watch with tenderness all of you who with weak and sensitive bodies struggle, work, fight, fail, continue, and serve. Well, he's outlined it for us. If we find ourselves struggling and faltering and all that, it's expected. We simply continue and we serve. We just move on. And they are seeing, they are seeing. Not 1 hour of service. I mean, you know, DK does not exaggerate. He does not. He's, you know, he's extraordinarily truthful. So when he says things like this, you really have to take it to heart. Not 1 hour of service given in pain and tension, not one day's labor followed with racked nerves, with head tired and with heart sick, is allowed to pass unnoticed. That's beautiful, you know. And if we could have that kind of attitude towards those for whom we are responsible, we would be doing well. We know and we care. Yet, we may do naught that you, struggling in the field of the world, can do of that which is needed. You know, so what Master Moria said, you know, to give all is to put on chains. And I told you that story where he had a disciple who was under attack, and he said, look, I could protect you here, but you would learn nothing. So we have to be, you know, I mean, they're not going to let us be overwhelmed, because they say there are certain people preparing for the reappearance of the Christ, or those who are, quote unquote, marked out for protection. Marked out for protection. And Master Moria said, and later you will see how we protected you. Maybe we don't see that or understand that. You know, they don't allow it to go too far, but at the same time, they give us enough scope to strengthen our powers against the malevolent forces, because we've got to, at some point, do that. We can't just always be dependent that someone is going to shelter us from these malevolent actualities. The world's karma engulfs each of you at this epoch. And what is an epoch? It was happening back, you know, following World War II when this was written, but we're still in it, obviously, and the danger for mass destruction is even greater. If you could but realize it, the time is short, and rest and joy, and rest, joy, and peace are on their way. You know, supposedly the Battle of Armageddon takes place, and this is following a period of peace in which, quote-unquote, Satan, considered as the personality of man, is bound for 1,000 years. Whether, you know, that's a symbolic measure, but for a while, at least, there will be a binding of what we call sin and Satan, and eventually the era of brotherhood will unfold in the last 720 years of the Aquarian Age. He goes on, the half-gained victory, we're familiar with that, the days lived through with a certain measure of success, yet with an unachieved ideal, not quite there, the minutes of exhaustion of soul and body, you know, where you can't you can't be inspired by the soul as you wish you could, when the emptiness of everything, even of service itself, like he says, the emptiness of study, he sometimes says, you know, he says of study, how much study can you do? And then you ask yourself the question, which he has obviously asked himself, can these dry bones live? You know, it's just study, it's just book knowledge. Can these dry bones live? So he knows, he's been through it, right? The minutes of exhaustion of soul and body, when the emptiness of everything, even of service itself, seems the only noticeable thing. The weeks and months of endeavor and of struggle against apparently insuperable odds, against the stupendous power of the forces of evolution. Because they, you know, even if it's good, it can sweep you in a way that disorganizes you. Against the roaring tide of the world's ignorance, all are known. That's one phrase I've always remembered. The roaring tide of the world's ignorance, and we are up against that and have to find a way to penetrate it. All are known. Take comfort in the assurance that love rules all, especially on our planet and at this time. Take courage from the realization that the hierarchy stands. And I wonder if there are times when we really do have to tell ourselves that. You know, when it is a source of comfort and encouragement to us, love rules all and the hierarchy stands, you know, and we take our stand upon that affirmation. It's not going to be easy, and for every one of us, you know, I can assure you it's going to be tougher than it is now. There's no way around it, and when you're struggling to help humanity move from the fourth kingdom into the fifth kingdom, at least a certain percentage of human beings, everything that wants to drag you back is going to be thrown against you, whether it's from your own nature or from others. There are those who don't want it to happen. Those who are to teach the world more about the masters and who are being trained to be focal points of contact are put through a very drastic disciplining. I was just talking to someone about the new esoteric school. Maybe, anyway, a drastic entrance examination will be forced upon every possible applicant. The word drastic, again, he doesn't exaggerate. This is a soul who does not exaggerate, and we are being put through a very drastic disciplining. And when we want to enter the new esoteric schools, it will be a very drastic entrance examination, and our karma will be looked up, and it will be decided whether we are fit to actually enter and have any possibility of success. All of this is tough stuff, but we have to get used to it. This is the hierarchy we're talking about, and we're moving towards the will, and you know it's not going to be compromised. They are tested in every possible way, that's us, and are taught much through bitter experience, like you know, missing two webinars because I added three instead of two. How long does it take? Okay. They are taught to attach no importance to recognition. Now, if you read Rule 11 in the Rays and the Initiations, you will see that one of the things that we have to overcome before we can even begin to consider Rule 11, which pertains to the fourth initiation, is to drop all desire for recognition. And there's so many of us who, in little ways, have not done that. But, you know, read those four things for the first few pages of Rule 11, and, you know, personality attachment goes, and occult silence has to be cultivated, and personal relations within the ashram are not emphasized. it's tough, okay? Tough when we consider that we are people who have often lived for the welfare of the personality and not for what the soul sees as possible. So no attachment to, no importance to recognition. They are trained. That's, people like ourselves, this he's telling us how we are trained. They are trained not to judge from the appearance, but from the inner vision, how really to see the soul and not the obvious, how not to be stuck on the obvious man, the obvious human being, but to go behind it and really see who is this individual, what is this circumstance. This would be pertaining to this particular level on the mental plane, which is the third sublevel, where spiritual discernment is the particular city that we use. It's the lowest level on the threefold level on which our soul is found. Okay, not to judge from the appearance, but from the inner vision, and spiritual discernment will give us that. The capacity to recognize the master's purpose, which is important for membership in his ashram. He chooses those who are aligned by ray and by intention with his purpose, and the ability to love are counted as of paramount importance. So see within, recognize the purpose, love. These are of paramount importance. Aspirants, that's all of us, he's training aspirants. Aspirants who seek to be chosen for work as disciples, the true disciple. Well, we're both really, must lose all desire for the things of self and must be willing at any cost to pay the price of knowledge. Now, wow, that's quite a statement. Just pause for a moment. Just pause. Pause. What are we willing to pay as the price of true inner knowledge? It's a great detaching process, and Master DK and the other masters have obviously paid this price. And we have to, there it is in our training. We count the cost, we count the cost, we count the cost, and by our willingness to relinquish many attachments for the sake of that which is of greater value, we prove our fitness for cooperation with them. If proof, now, proof, right now it's speculation, if proof is to be given to the world of the subjective realm of reality, it will be bought with the heart's blood, for only in the blood of the heart can power be safely gained and wisely wielded. I mean, every one of these things is a magnificent little meditation. If proof is to be given to the world of the subjective realm of reality, which, hardly believes in it at all right now, it will be bought with the heart's blood. And whatever that means to us, for only in the blood of the heart can power be safely gained and wisely wielded. So we ponder on that. We're thinking also of St. Paul's book or Master Hilarion's book, Light on the Path, where he talks about this in the beginning of the book. Yeah, we might as well know what we're in for and not fool ourselves, right? It's nice to be a student and to run into new things which are exciting, and but unless these realities are actually recognized, it's just going to be book knowledge. As you go on, and as aspirants study the hidden laws of nature, you will realize the need for the price paid. Because, you know, there will be compassion. And unless there is profound compassion, the misuse of power can sneak in. There's this old story about Master KH, you know, when he was Pythagoras and he scolded a student. I don't know in relation to what, but the student took it so seriously that he went out and committed suicide. And that had a profound effect on Pythagoras. And he resolved from that point, you know, always to speak in a manner that had compassionate understanding as the note, recognizable to whomever. That's a bitter, bitter lesson, you know, for a great soul like him. Virtually an initiate of the fourth degree at that time, I suspect, to be hit with that kind of repercussion of one's words. So I'm sure there are those moments in our history of lives when we've really had those learning experiences which were very, very bitter. But they last, you know. They are the guardians. They are the signposts. They stick with us. And when you have in your life a great aversion to something negative, it's very probable that some bitter experience has been marked out for you in the earlier days and stands as a guardian of your present process. It's a thorny road, we're told. The thorny road of occultism. Well, just imagine, bare feet on the thorns. It's not easy, because you have to have the bare feet to have the sensitivity. But the thorns are there. And you know how it is with the plant, the rose. You know, it's guarded by thorns. So this is the path of pain, but it's a fast path on this planet of releasing sorrow and purifying pain. So the spiritual unfoldment of the disciple's character must keep pace with his inner knowledge. We can't forget this, otherwise we're in danger. Now, how does this inner knowledge grow? You see, normally I would stop here, but I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to stop. Because I think we need, well, maybe I'll be forced to stop. I don't want to. This knowledge grows in three ways. By definite expansions of consciousness, which open up to the disciple a realization of the points to be attained. Consciousness is always growing, always unfolding. So this is what we have to continue to foster. Really, the new disciple is much more concerned with consciousness than with events. This produces in his mind a formulation of what lies ahead to be grasped, and is the first step towards acquirement. So let us, under Jupiter, under Venus, under all the different planets, find a way to expand our conscious sensitivity. An aspirant is definitely taken on the inner planes, I suppose at night, you know, and shown by a more advanced chela what is the work to be done, much in the same way as a pupil is shown by his master the lesson to be learned. Well, we may not, you know, the brain sensitivity may not be such that we remember these things, but, you know, we're being schooled, and the law of economy is operative, and if it's possible in our condition to be shown something and taught something in those classes at night, we are taught. Some people bring it through, some people don't. It is happening, he tells us. So our consciousness is always expanding. Our sensitivity to the unseen is always growing. We're being encouraged at night to do this. our powers are growing. Now, what about this inner knowledge? The disciple's character must keep pace with the inner knowledge. Okay. Number two, the next step is the mastering of the lesson and the working out in meditation and experiment of the truths sensed. Okay, well, this is not just book knowledge, right? This is actually for application. So, this is a lengthy process, especially in the beginning, for all has to be assimilated. That's what I'm encouraging us to do in these last 7 or so years before the decisive point of the great conclave in 2025. This is a lengthy process, and all has to be assimilated and made part and parcel of the disciple's very self before he can go on. You know that old saying, which I've told you about, even a donkey can carry a library on his back. Now that's the symbol of unassimilated knowledge. It resembles the working out of a sum, figure by figure, line by line, the working out being carried forward until the answer is achieved. We've all been through that in our mathematics. The work is done both on the inner planes and on the physical. We just have to have the faith that on the inside of life, this work is being done, whether or not we remember it. Now, are we in the hall of learning or are we in the hall of wisdom? In the hall of learning, the pupil is taught nightly for a short time before proceeding with any work of service. This teaching he brings over into his physical brain consciousness in the form of a deep interest in certain subjects and in an increasing attitude to think concretely and abstractly on various occult matters that are occupying his attention. So, you know, when we have this consuming interest in anything, especially in our field here, it has been stimulated from the hall of learning on the inner side when we are conscious away from the body. So just, you know, question yourself. What am I deeply, deeply interested in? When did I decide to make that move in a certain direction? You've been schooled inwardly to prepare you for that. Just as in initiation, we are shown the path ahead to a certain extent, and we are thus prepared to follow it. He attempts to experiment and tries various methods of studying the laws, and in process of time, arrives at results that are of value to him. Time passes, and as he appropriates and knows more, his knowledge takes a synthetic form. Now, in the new esoteric schools, you're not even let in unless you show some capacity for synthesis. This is interesting because it relates to the coming first ray and for the way we will be trained. So synthetic apprehension is needed by us. His knowledge takes a synthetic form, just the way you can see Master DK's does, and he becomes ready to teach and to impart to others the residue of knowledge of which he is sure. It's very little, okay, it's very little, but there are people who know still less, and we can help. And then, as he teaches, I forget how it goes, but you know, if you're a listener, what do you retain? 5%? And if you have to teach a subject, you retain 95%. I've heard that. Anyway, whether my figures are correct, you learn a lot more teaching than you do just, you know, absorbing and listening. So if you think you have anything of which you are fairly sure, and you find anyone who is not sure of these things at all and knows less, get out there and share it with them. Because in so doing, you will not only help them, you will help yourselves greatly. Be sure of the knowledge you teach. Okay, in teaching, others comes further knowledge. That's number three. The definition of truth in teaching crystallizes the facts learned. Fifth ray. And in the play of other minds, the aspirant's own vibration becomes keyed up to ever higher planes, and this fresh intuition and fresh reaches of truth pour in. Alice Bailey saw things she just couldn't believe when the Tibetan was dictating to her, she said. When one lesson has in this way been mastered, a further one is set, and when the pupil has learned a particular series of lessons, he graduates and passes an initiation from the Hall of Learning into the Hall of Initiation, the Hall of Wisdom, beginning really with the seventh petal in the sacrifice tier of the egoic lotus. And when the fifth petal is fully unfolded, you've taken that first initiation. When the sixth petal is fully unfolded, you've taken the second. And when all three petals of the higher tier are unfolded, you've taken the third degree. If you want more about that, I have that book on the video book on the egoic lotus. So we learn, we accumulate, we apply, and we pass. Pass, we pass. The whole group he teaches. Now, many of you are teachers in one way or another. We all teach by example, good or bad. So the whole group he teaches is benefited by his step forward. For every disciple carries those he instructs along with him in a curious and indefinable sense. And Master D.K. ought to know, having such a large training ashram. The benefit to the unit reacts upon the whole. A master carries his disciples on and up with him in a similar manner. The matter is abstruse and largely one of the secrets of the law of vibratory expansion. Well, we can ponder on all the rates and measures induced by the higher vibration. The initiation of the Logos, our solar Logos, has a universal effect. These are all very promising things, aren't they? Very promising. But there will be a price. We know what it is. And to forego peace, to forfeit rest, and in the stress of pain, to lose myself and find myself, thus entering into peace. There are these mantras, they really help. If we memorize them, they become part of our heart, you know. So here is the last paragraph that I want to get through before we begin again. Before we begin again, I think after the first week of January. And have you got your Capricornian New Year's resolutions shaping up? I always love that time of year because it gives an opportunity to apply the will, you know, and to set the things we know we should do and have a standard, you know. So try to think about them before. And by the way, if you already are a member of the Moria Federation, I'm going to be doing a Moria Federation solstice meditation. It won't be exact time of the solstice because our broadcast is at the solstice, but it'll be just leading up to the solstice where we can look ahead at our studies and our meditations and our intentions of becoming more fit to cooperate with the hierarchy. Okay, so final paragraph. You are right in your assumption that the probationary path corresponds to the later stages of the period of gestation. We're not quite born yet spiritually, right? At the first initiation, what is called in the New Testament, the babe in Christ, starts out upon the pilgrimage of the path. Now, you know how it goes. There's the babe, there's the little child, which is moving towards the second initiation. There's the young man, the second degree initiate. There's the rich young man, it's called the third degree initiate. And we finally reach, you know, maturity within the hierarchy at mastership. Now, the first initiation is the beginning. So many people are going to be taking that. We have to help them do that. I'm assuming that so many of us who are studying earnestly here, trying to improve our lives, beautify our lives, purify our lives, learn something spiritual in an ongoing way, D.K. would say, okay, you've taken the first initiation. So among his students, every student there of about 50 students, except one had taken the first initiation. I'm going to assume that many of us are in that position where we have experienced this birth of the Christ in the heart. So it stands for the beginning, commencement, a certain structure of right living, of thinking, and of conduct has been attained. The form that the Christ is to occupy, the Buddhic energy coming in to the soul body, has been constructed, and now that form is to be vivified and indwelt. The Christ life enters, and the form becomes alive. Alive in Christ, alive in the second ray, alive in love, wisdom. Therein lies the difference between theory and making that theory a part of ourselves. And no one I know, and including myself, has done what must be done in this transition of theory to fact. You can have a perfect picture or image, but it lacks life. You have a person who has modeled his life on the divine as far as he can. He has a good copy, yet something is lacking, and what is this something? The manifestation of the indwelling Christ. The Buddhic energy comes increasingly into the causal body. This is the Christ energy. The germ has been there, but it has lain dormant. Now it is fostered and brought to birth, and the first initiation is attained. The Christ, it's amazing to me, he retakes the first initiation with every candidate who is taking that initiation and to whom he is administering this first initiation. Okay, the germ has been there, it's lain dormant, now it's brought to birth. Much then remains to be done. The analogy is complete. Many years were spent by the disciple Jesus between the birth and the baptism. So for most people, a lot of lives will intervene between the first and second, not necessarily all. I found a reference which said, you can take that initiation in the next life. But I assume it's because of a lot of work done before, which was not necessarily spiritual, but which built you up in terms of your capacities. The remaining three initiations were taken in 3 years, and you have the same situation on the path of the aspirant. So, all of this encourages us when we're facing our fears. The glamour of fear, the great glamour, which stops so many from being all they can be in a particular life cycle, this pulling back, this trembling. Leadbeater has a kind of a description of what an aura looks like when it's subject to fear. It's not a very pretty picture of a gelatinous gray mass. But okay, the more we have confidence in the immortal God within, he tells us we have to have this, the more we can fearlessly face all these things, which can mean the destruction of the form. Indeed, it can. But we know that we are not that. We have experience being what we are. We have experience out of the body. We have experience looking on and seeing the body as just a vehicle. So when these things become established, then we are in a position to help humanity fight fear. I have a friend who is brilliant. He's on the third and fifth ray. We've been friends for 70 years. But of course, his extreme intellectuality prevents him from giving credence to any of this, which just seems to him like total nonsense. Now he's reaching the end of his life, he's older, and he's afraid. And I promise, I say, hey, look, I'm going to show you around on the other side when we get there. He laughs, But we have to have the experience that establishes for ourselves that the body can be let go because it's not the real person. We have to have that vivid inner experience that proves to us it is the case, Master Moria says as soon as the man drops his body, he suddenly becomes fearless on the inner side. Well, maybe as a generality, that is true. So if we're going to stand up here with this glamour of fear and find a way to help other people see their way through it, because the name of fears is legion, then okay, we have to be free of fear ourselves. The first ray will help because it is the ray of fearlessness, and probably because it's so identified with the will and with the inner being. So let's realize that whatever we are trying to encourage in other people, we have somehow to accomplish within ourselves. Now, I know I've talked for a long time here, but we have finished this part, and we'll be ready for something new when we start again in January. So if there are any thoughts or questions about these things, you certainly are welcome to offer them at this time. This will be a little longer session than some of the sessions, but I assume that we'll be okay. We'll be okay about that. Okay, so now I see Carl here, and go ahead, Carl.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Carl.
Can you hear me?
I surely can.
Can you hear me?
I got you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Listen, in regards to what you've been talking about, I there's this thing on page 355, DK says, about can we stand the pressure? White magic.
Okay.
And if I might read this paragraph, I think it's very apropos.
Okay, please. Please go ahead.
When a man literally walks in the light of his soul, and the clear light of the sun pours through him, revealing the path, it also, at the same time, reveals the plan. Simultaneously, however, he becomes aware of the fact that the plan is very far from consummation. The dark becomes more truly apparent. The chaos and misery and failure of the world group stand revealed. The filth and dust of the warring forces are noted, and the whole sorrow of the world bears down upon the astounded yet illuminated aspirant. Can he stand the pressure? Can he become indeed acquainted with grief and yet rejoice forever in divine consciousness? Has the ability to face what the light reveals and still go his way with serenity, sure of the ultimate triumph of good? Will he be overwhelmed by the surface evil and forget the heart of love which beats behind all outer seeming? This situation should ever be remembered by the disciple, or he will be shattered by that which he has discovered.
Such a good paragraph, and you know, we think we can take it, and we think we're equal to all things, but until we're tested, we just don't know. And the right outcome is given here. You know, this is such a wonderful book. I've begun to think, I know that many of us have studied it, but I'm beginning to think that it will be necessary to do a very focused, detailed study of A Treatise on White Magic coming up before long. When I finish this work in Rays and Initiations, it may be something that I get to, and which can involve some of us if we want to do that. Well, can we? That's the question, Carl. And
well, that paragraph really struck me very hard.
Yeah.
And I pondered it much. And it's ironic, perhaps, that it just came up pretty much now, just right behind, a couple pages behind where you are.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, obviously, looking at the context, we gain from that, you know. So thanks for calling that to our attention. You know, it's quite a revelation. And can you see reality and not be broken, you know? Or maybe I should call it actuality. In other words, it's not really reality. It's what's happening. And not be broken. Because a lot of us are idealists, and we have this idea about how things could be. And maybe in our lives and those around us, they are somewhat that way. And then we look at the condition. I just read, oh, it's horrible, these Rohingya people. What did it say? Just 6,000 people have been killed within the last short time. There's this, who knows the karma? We don't know, but the people of Burma or Myanmar or Buddhists, for heaven's sake, are behind all of this slaughter. There's an evening out. Some terrible things are going on, but you ask yourself, why does this have to be? And that's like nothing. Millions and millions could die under certain events, whether they are atomic events or disease events. We're told that some kind of epidemic had been planned earlier. I think it was in World War One or something, and the flu, of course, did come through. But humanity took matters into its own hands with the Great War, spanning 31 years or so, and it was seen to be unnecessary. So the loss of form these days could appear quite catastrophic, even compared with what has happened before. I think we have to be ready for that, and can we stand it, and seeing what really lies behind it, can we stand it? That'll be up to everybody to answer. So thanks, Carl, for calling attention to this one. It's familiar, and it's something we all ought to have in mind. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, and here is oh yes,
Suzanne.
Brett, Suzanne, yeah. Okay, Suzanne, go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. We're glad you made it.
Hi, Suzanne. Go ahead.
My muse came forth here pondering the entrance of Saturn into Capricorn coming up, I believe, around the solstice time, which made me think that we have to remember that, yes, we have form, but the transformation of form and remembering the strength of what the form truly is. And these are just a couple of lines, if I may.
Yes, go ahead.
As gold forked, thou art tempered steel, a diamond ground neath life's hard heel. Thus get thee hence, mock not thy fate. 'Tis high time that ye expiate. Just a reminder to keep strong and remember that strength is truly there. Thank you.
Indeed, and when you're talking about the diamond, it's so interesting in relation to Capricorn, because this is the sign associated with that state of diamond soul when the jewel in the lotus is revealed. And all of us are put under such a pressure, in the formation of that diamond. Vulcan is the planet that really puts it to us and gets us into shape so we can be a true representative of the spirit, and there's a lot of pressure, a lot of suffering. So I hope I heard everything. I have a little problem with this headset, and maybe I'm going to try to put in a different headset because it's a little echoey, but I hope I got what I needed to out of that, and I appreciate the reading. Just one second. Try this. All right, let's see if this will help at all. Maybe it's a little higher frequency, and when you get to be my age, sometimes you lose certain frequencies in your hearing.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I empathize with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Suzanne. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Michael,
Yes, Brett.
we don't hear you very well.
Oh, you okay? How's this?
That's much better.
Okay, I'm sorry. All right, I can't find the perfect headset. Each one has a little something missing. Anyway, this is a slightly higher pitch for me, and I might be in a position to hear more. Okay, now who else? Anyone else? I mean, these are very practical things we've been dealing with and very encouraging. And if anybody wonders, you know, does the hierarchy really care? Well, you know, with words like these from Master DK, you just understand how great is the caring, but how the balance has to be kept. Otherwise, we learn nothing, you know. You cannot give everything. And we have to be put on our own with regard to many, many things. So can we take it? Can we stand it? Well, we had better somehow. Okay. And okay, Frederick, I had something here from you, but I know it was a long time ago. So, but I like the words. Anything else, friends? Anything else that you want to say, ask, whatever? We're getting to that point in the year, Advent, right? Where, in a Sagittarian manner, we are really looking forward to the great revelation in the heart of the spirit of the head of the hierarchy, you know, that great love energy that comes in. And certainly at the solstice, in a way, it really starts, you know. It's a very solemn moment, and I think that's why DK said, look, the new schools, they have to start at the solstice. They start at the Capricorn solstice. And it's just such a solemnity comes over us at that time. And I suppose it sweeps through all traditions. You know, maybe in the Christian tradition, it might be a little more direct, but, you know, it's a global event that occurs. And we have to help humanity reinterpret the Abrahamic religions of Judaism, Islam, Christianity. There is an occult inner basis to all of these things based upon energy, and we have to find a way to make this evident to people who are simply believing in the letter of the law and the form of things. In other words, this is all about the problem of the transition from the concrete mind to the abstract mind, or to the higher mind and then the abstract mind. If we are mired in the concrete mind, with an emphasis upon the fifth ray and the sixth ray, combined in an unholy alliance, which is very, very limiting upon the truth, we as humanity are going to have a very divisive time with each other. And we will fear the taking away of the outer forms until we have identified with what we are internally. And that, of course, every day, you know, we have to remind ourselves of what we really are. And when we see the testimony of the senses, there's something behind these senses, which we are, and which we have to feel that we are and know that we are. The theory, it's good, but it's never good enough. And so whatever will take you as a aspirant and disciple from theory to practice, let that be applied. Okay, let that be applied. Well, anyway, is there anybody else before we do our meditation? I realize we're a little bit late here. I know it's my insistence on plowing on, you know. I wanted to do that so that we could, you know, finish this section and start with something new, a new sort of impulse. It'll still be Capricorn. It'll probably be around the time of the full moon. You know, does anybody know when the next full moon is exactly? Does anybody? I mean, I can find out pretty quick, but, you know, just going to the solar fire. By the way, if you're an astrologer and you don't have this program, this is the program to get, you know, the solar fire program. And here's the lunar phase, and here's the next 100, and here is the full moon on the 3rd of December. Okay, well, it occurs a little before we'll be getting together again, but we will be doing our usual full moon things. So, you know, tomorrow Tuya does the Soul of Nations work, and then after that we're going to sort of wish you farewell on these Ask project webinars and broadcasts, and join us for the Christmas and the solstice broadcasts and the New Year's vigil broadcast, and we'll try to get that all sent out to you. Okay. All right. Then if there's nothing else, then we're going to go on to our meditation. Excuse me. I seem to have four ears here, but okay. Let's see. Let's get this off. And here it is. Okay. Good. There's a goodly number of us gathered together here today. And maybe we can make a little difference. A little difference in the inner climate of the astral plane, so that a better outworking, a better manifestation can occur. Okay. So, there's 41 of us here now, something like that. We gather together in the silence for a few moments. And we're offering ourselves as an instrument for the clarification, you might almost say decontamination, of the astral plane. And we'll use our cross of divinity, our protective cross, which should be shining with light, and we will say, as we use this protective formula, which, believe me, is needed. Don't venture into this work without it. And when you're doing your own individual glamour work, you know, use the cross, a great cosmic symbol, and in this time related to the chakric condition of the human being. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. It's this longer arm cross. And it shines for each one of us, and it shines for the group. So that is protection. Now, the three lights have to be brought together. The light of matter drawn up to the mental level, where it meets the light of the lower mind, the analytical reasoning mind. We visualize these two lights merging. And then the third light, meditation on soul contact and the recognition of soul light. Let's do that. For each one of us, the light of the soul is accessible, and we draw it down. We imaginatively draw down the light of the soul and merge it with the two other lights on the mental plane, so three lights are one. It's a vital, intelligent, and unifying, sanitizing light we have created. Triple light. From which a beam will soon go forth. And then we will say, followed by the sacred word, the following little mantra. The light is one. And in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. So for each of us there is a light, and for the group as a whole there is a light. And as we use the formula, we're going to see that searchlight appearing. And for each of us, the searchlight blends into the greater light. The greater searchlight for the group, for the group. And that light will be shining out, or shining in, however you want to look at it, onto the astral plane, where all these miasmas have to be cleared up. So, radiance and power are we. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work, and turn the darkness into day. So, we are the span between heaven and the astral plane. It's really connecting the world of the soul with the astral phenomena. And our searchlight is out there. It is our weapon, and it also reveals where it has to be applied, because so many glamours are easy to overlook, and we just take them for granted as, well, that's how things are. But the searchlight reveals them and works at dissipating and destroying them. So our little searchlight goes forth to join the others and creates the great beam that we're going to use together. And then we're going to strengthen that beam with the spiritual will, the strength of which is dependent upon our willingness to cooperate with the divine plan. And we say, as we strengthen the beam with spiritual will, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. A kind of irresistible beam, revealing, dissipating, destroying, scattering. In the imagination, we have this together. Now, we're going to name our glamour, the glamour of fear, and its divisions, our legion. So many different isolated instances of it. We have to know if we have fear as an individual, what the fear may be. But right now we're working on behalf of humanity and in general. And so we're going to use these words of power, and as we use them, we will visualize our beam penetrating into the glamour, the veil, the miasma, the cloud, however you want to look at it, and producing its weakening. It's dissipation, it's scattering. You know, the law of repulse on the first ray, it's a scattering force. But we drive it back, we drive it further back. And so, we say together, visualizing the destructive work to be done, the power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of fear. the power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. And if a glamour is devitalized, it's much easier to dissipate, drive back, expel, destroy. So now we're going to have our 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose as we see the work proceeding, according to the three words of power. 5 minutes. And so the sun of fearlessness shines upon the astral plane. The sun of true perception and knowledge. The sun of love. The sun of the will behind the plan. And the clouds, the miasmas, the veils, these are gradually, gradually detected and cleared away. So we withdraw our beam together, imaginatively from the astral plane, back to the triple light as one on the mental plane. That beam is shut off for the moment, the searchlight, and we will persist in detecting what are the glamours, what are their effects, and what can be done to alleviate the situation which holds so many in bondage without their even knowing it. So friends, we have many things coming up now for the solstice and for Christmas and for the new year. On the 23rd, we're going to read the complete gospel story. We'll send you the timing on that, and we will have about 5 different events. And Olivia and Tuya and I invite you to our resumption of this work, which will occur in the beginning part of January, probably after the full moon. And we'll be there for the full moon with the pre-full moon, and also with the broadcast for the exact moment of the Capricorn full moon. We really have to take this sign, Capricorn, very seriously. It's the sign of initiation, and under it, the birth of the Christ occurs for so many thousands. We're on our way there, and under it, the divine law is wielded, and under it, our will is strengthened, so we can cooperate more fully as desired. So we'll be sending you the details on these broadcasts, and we'll be resuming the ASK program shortly after the full moon in January. But yet tomorrow we still have our broadcast at 5 p.m. GMT. And I will try to remember that it's at 7 o'clock our time in Finland and not at 8 o'clock. Goodness. And Tuya will be helping to do some of this emergency work that we do from the inside and the Souls of Nations work. So thank you very much, everybody, for attending. And we'll be working with you during the next 2 weeks on various things. I hope you have a wonderful anticipation Advent holiday season, holy day season. And that the spirit of the head of the hierarchy of the Christ sweeps through you and through your groups. We're about to enter the Capricorn energy, and it's solemn and wonderful. And let us take full advantage of that. So love and many blessings from all of us, and see you soon.